Hello, welcome to Firestarters, the UK's first podcast for social enterprises in health. This is part four of a workshop on how to create a social enterprise. If you've not been listening to the others, you really need to go back and follow it. I'm Dave Dawes from entrepreneurs.net, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. Marketing, heavily misunderstood phrase, marketing. I'm going to talk a bit about marketing in a minute. People think marketing is PR and advertising. PR and advertising may or may not be useful. Actually, I haven't done any for about 4 years, and never really harmed us. But understanding what market you're in and your competitors is, and a lot of people don't get this. So if you're going to go for a contract, what is the size of the amount of money that's in an area? So let's take, for instance, let's take nursing homes as an example. So, okay, what is the nursing home market in, I don't know, Manchester? You can find this stuff out. Libraries, all of this stuff's freely available. You can basically, after about a day or so, work out what's the value of the market, who are the competitors, what's the shape of the market. There's loads of free stuff. Like I said, library business sections are great starts. But is what you're trying to do, what market are you in? So are you in the market of, say, hypnotherapy? Okay, who else is in the market of hypnotherapy? Who are the competitors? And what's the demand like? Are we going to get enough bums on seats? And are they going to pay enough to do it? So if you're going to do, I don't know, fair trade bananas. Okay, what's the banana market like in your area? How much sales is there? Who else is out there? And are you going to be able to create a niche that's actually going to make, is there a business there or not? Now, you can spend days in a pub, but there's a bit of me that I often tease out people. What market, is there enough interest in what you want and enough money to make the thing sustainable? And at a ballpark level, you can usually work that out quite quick. And I do bump into some people with social entrepreneur ideas. Great idea. Go, there's no business in it. Do it as a hobby. Do it as a volunteer group. Set up a charity. That's fine. You will never make a living doing that. You know, or feel free to prove me wrong and be million successful again. Yeah, that day does. Said I'd never do it. Income and expenditure. Just big, broad brush stuff. How much money will it cost you to run it? Is it a 10 grand business? Is it a 50 grand business? Is it 100 grand? Is it a million? Is it 5 million? Is it 10 million? That sort of level. And how much money are you going to get in? Very, very ballpark. But it's enough to tell you, is it a goer or not? So if your idea is to create an airline, social enterprise ecology airline, okay, what does it take to run an airline? I have no idea. I said, we might say, it's going to cost about £10 million a year to run, and you're going to need £30 million a year startup. Okay, right. Well, that's going to give you some challenges. Equally, if it's like a part-time worker and some volunteers, you might say, we could do the whole thing. I met someone yesterday, and they only needed £8,000 a year to run their business. You know, in its early stages. And I went, okay, so if you could get 12 grand in, you could run it as a business. Right, that's kind of easy. How much startup money do you need? You know, there is a gap between when you start and when you get paid. And in a kind of nutshell, there's like a graph where you start off, you start eating up money and eating up money. Then you start getting some contracts, but you're still just about clawing back in. And then, you know, you're making profit. My maths days, the iteration of this, the size of that is the amount of money you need. So if it's going to be 6 months before you break even, and you're going to need 50 grand, then you need to get 50 grand from somewhere. And you need to get a startup finance for 50 grand. You know, the smaller that sum is, the easier it's to do. And then who? Who are you going to do it with? Who are passionate about doing it with you? Who are the people who would sign a document saying, if this goes pear-shaped, you can have my house? Who are the people who are prepared to work night and day when you get into trouble? Those are the people you want in the early days. You know. I would say if someone won't sign a personal guarantee that says if it goes pear-shaped, I'll put £5,000 of my own money into the business, you don't want them in the early stages. Because you will. Because when you go for an overdraft, they will turn around to you and say, that's fine, you want to borrow some money, I want a personal guarantee. Because we're not stupid. We've seen that limited by guarantee bit. We know if it goes pear-shaped, you're only going to give us a quid. We're not daft. We want a separate piece of paper saying we want personal guarantees. And, you know, and I say to people, if you run a social enterprise, you are risking losing your house. You know, it may not be a big risk, it may be a very small risk, but that's, you have to go in knowing that. And you may at some point have to raise money by saying, you can have £50,000 out of the house if it all goes pear-shaped. now please invest this money and we'll make the business a success. Okay, but that should be on a napkin. You know, and I should say to people, within 5 minutes, I should be able to get that out of you. If you came to me and said, I've got this idea, this is kind of what we're going to do. Here's our market, here's our main competitors. We think the price is about this, we think the demand's about this. Roughly, we're going to get this in and that out in our first year or 2 years. We need about this much startup, we're going to start it with this team. That's all you need. Everything else is waffle. But if you haven't got that, or at least thought about it, or kind of scribbled it on a napkin somewhere, you sort of need that before you start. Comments, questions, thoughts?
Something you just said then about...
Hiya, this is Simon.
Hi, Simon. Something you just said then about
deleting
your house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
people, I don't know what it is, but I get people's attention really well when I mention this. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that got my attention.
Yeah, it often does.
Thinking of going back to the models, social enterprise models, one of the models is the limited by guarantee.
Yeah.
If you were a social enterprise limited by guarantee, then presumably that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, it will. Because here's how it works. Shelley, do you need some money to set up your new business? How much do you need? Tell you what, Shelley, I'm going to lend you £50,000, but I'm going to get you to sign this piece of paper that says, in the event of the company liquidating, you're going to give me £50,000. You personally are going to guarantee £50,000, not the company, you personally. Do you want to sign this piece of paper or not? Most people will make you sign that piece of paper. Banks will. Banks will not give you an overdraft. The company limits my guarantee unless you sign a personal guarantee under me. Unless you're
so
lucky.
That's what you meant by a personal guarantee.
Yeah. Unless you're lucky enough to have an asset-rich organisation. So if you own a hospital or you own buildings and you own maybe £2 million worth of housing stock, then they might say, yeah, we'll give you £50,000 because we know if it goes pear-shaped, we're going to have those assets. Most social enterprises that are in the service industry, which is a lot of what you were talking about, probably won't have much assets. Because most of what you do is services provided by people. So if you need to borrow and you haven't got the assets, if you've got the assets in the business, then they'll take first claim against those assets. If you haven't got the assets in the business, they'll ask for them personally. So at various times in the foundation, I provided, well, in fact, when we liquidated, I had to pick up 35? Was it 40? I think it was £35,000 personal debt, because that's what we'd guaranteed. One was a loan, one was an overdraft.
Are we going to come on to the funding side of things, as in the different grants, loans, investor sponsorship,
this type of thing? Are you talking about startup or revenue?
Yes, startup.
Okay, yeah, we will. I mean, in a nutshell, I'll tell you what, we'll do it now, because it'll only take about 10 minutes, but then we'll do some questions. In terms of startup money, and I'm going to crib a bit here, we're aiming to break it about one. In terms of startup, and I'm going to crib a bit here, because these are probably the two books, and at lunchtime I'll talk you through. One's Finding Finance, the Essential Guide from CDFA, and the other's Unlocking a Potential, a Guide to Finance for Social Enterprises. How to get startup money. Okay. First one is your money. In other words, your savings or you taking out a personal loan. One of the things you'll discover, it might have changed a bit now, again, it's one of those things no one talks about when they're starting their businesses, is if you try and get £30,000 as a business loan, you will fill in, 50, 100 page forms. You will have a series of meetings. It will take 5 or 6 months. It will take forever. Or you could dial Ocean Finance. Say it's for a holiday, and they'll send you a cheque for £30,000 in about a week. There are dot-com industries on the West Coast whose entire startup capital was funded by credit card applications pre-approved coming through the door. And in fact, I've heard a few people say, when they come through, go, you've been pre-authorised for a £5,000 credit card that went great. There you go. Max it out. Money in the business. The easiest and the fastest way to get money. Relatives and friends. Most investors or funders will not even consider you unless you've actually explored that. And it's and some of this stuff touches some real emotional stuff, and guilt, and I don't want to pry into your relationships with your parents, your aunts and relatives and friends, but people will expect you to. If you've got someone and you just say to them, well, look, would you invest your own money? Because if you're asking for someone else for money, and you're in effect saying, well, I'm not actually putting any of my own in, and no, of course I'm not going to ask any friend or relative, they go, well, why are you asking me? And it's a kind of understandable question. It's not nice, it's not pleasant, but people will ask it. Then you get banks, usually in the form of overdraft and loans, and that will take a lot of time. Then you get grants, and then you get equity. Everyone and their dog wants grants, because they think grants is easy, grants doesn't involve having to deal with any childhood trauma, it's quite nice, we fill in loads of forms, and most will turn you down. You'll get turned down by almost every grant. Yeah?
You've also got where you might have a contract from a local authority or NHS where they have a contract with you to set a service up.
So they'll
you can actually give you a contract to set up sometimes.
It might be an initial contract with you.
Yeah.
That's the very best you can get. But
these are in order of difficulty.
Yeah.
That took us 6 months. Most people say no to that. What happens is you tend to go here and get knocked back up that list very, very, very quickly. So by all means, start here. If you end up not needing that, you're a very, very, very rare creature. I mean, very, very rare creature. And that's when the scale of your enterprise comes in. Because let me tell you, if you're hiring staff, and you've paid for that staff with your credit card and your loan on your house, you get very, very fussy about what you pay people and whether or not you need someone. And you start doing deals on office furniture. But that is often where you're. Very few social enterprises or entrepreneurs in any stage don't start off with that. And often these people will want evidence that you've gone for that. Banks will usually say no to you, especially at the moment. You know, and even if they say yes, they will usually want personal guarantees. And you can get personal guarantees from yourself. Sometimes you can get it from relatives. Where you say to someone, look, could you just sign a £10,000 guarantee for me? This is in the event you're going bankrupt, you'll pick it up. Like I said, everyone and the dog applies for grants.
Friends and family.
Yeah.
I know someone who's been applying for grants for 15 months and got none. I applied for 205 and got 204 rejection. I got £2,000 from a little fund in Salford. It's very, very, very hard.
We're testing the reality this afternoon.
Yeah. Equity is hard. Equity is very hard. You have to outperform the Dragon's Den. Like, you can't outperform the people in the Dragon's Den, quite frankly, you're an idiot, because they needed some coaching. And, you know, there's maybe one or two good business ideas and some people that shouldn't be in front of them. But you will get drilled down, and they will all say, why haven't you put your own money in? And some of them will want to say, I want to see your house. I want to see the value of your house. I want to see your bank account. I want you to prove you couldn't put this money in. Because, and quite rightly, you're asking them for money. You don't think it's going to be enough of a success to risk your money on, but you're asking them to risk their money. That's the attitude they'll have. Comments, questions? And I can go into a bit more detail, but that's kind of... It's everyone wants this. Everyone wants someone else to give them the money for startup without them having to invest any of their own money, take on the personal debt, risk their house, or have to ask relatives to do it. And it's kind of one of those myths. The odd person pulls it off, great, but it's very, very, very rare. And the other thing is, while you're waiting for this stuff, you've got to survive. And if you've left your job, because one of the other things we did is you end up eating this. You end up living on there. So in fact, when the foundation went liquidated last year, I had £95,000 worth of personal debt, which was a mixture of guarantees I put in, which then got picked up, money that I'd had to live on before the business went. Now, the business itself made £250,000 turnover, but it never made enough turnover to start repaying some of that stuff. That's kind of the reality of, you know, setting up a social enterprise. Bless you. Which is why when I say to directors, the people you want as directors, if they just say there is no way on earth I'm signing even like a £5,000 guarantee, then when you as four directors go to see the bank manager and they get out personal guarantee forms, and people go, well, I'm not doing that. then suddenly you're going to hit a problem. So, but the thing about the house is a funny one, because I often puncture this a bit. And I go, well, if you work for the NHS and the NHS decides to restructure and make you redundant and you're out of work, you could lose your house. You know, there is no way, there really isn't a risk-free way of keeping your house. It's just sometimes we don't think of it in that way. But yeah, you need to just think, you know, I still have my house. You can actually deal with a company liquidating £95,000 worth of debt and still keep your house. But you need to be aware it's there. And the reason, part of the reason I kept it is because I planned. And you knew how to do it, and you put structures in place, and you manage that debt situation. Is this the point when everyone gets out of the room and goes, do you know what? I've had a thought. I don't want to be a safe hands place anymore.
No, it is just quite scary, isn't it? Though,
yeah.
When you think about it, and you do have to sit and take stock, because it is a frightening thought. I mean, I've got 2 young children.
Yeah.
And I don't want to risk losing my home.
Yeah.
Where are they going to live? But, you know, you quite rightly say, I can get a job tomorrow, well, anywhere. And then if myself and my husband aren't working and earning money, how do we pay our mortgage and lose our house anyway?
Yeah.
And how do you balance the keeping the day job and starting a social enterprise, and when do you drop one?
That's another aspect, isn't it?
Two of the things hardly anyone ever talks about. Fear and guilt. Fear and guilt and managing those are a big issue in running a social enterprise. Guilt in that, and in terms of partners and stuff, when it's house, you know, and you have to have those discussions. I would certainly say to them, if you're going to sign something, it's kind of nice to let other people that live there know what's happening, and they may have to sign some forms too. Guilt, because asking, I've had to ask my mum for money, okay, for my business. I would rather crawl over broken glass, but sometimes you have to do it. Sorry, mum, if you're listening, nothing personal. But it is not nice. It is a deeply unpleasant thing asking people for money. And sometimes it's nicer to ask a professional kind of person. But then sometimes, and some of those equity people actually came back to me and said, well, this money is actually my kid's inheritance that I'm trying to grow. So you're taking risk with my kid's, you know, money. And, you know, so it is hard. And actually managing the fear is one of the issues. Because as an entrepreneur, there is always that fear. Because what if 4 of those invoices and someone comes back, it's happened to me, and said, we're not paying that for 5 months because our trust is in deficit, so we're not paying anyone for 5 months. And we don't care that you're a teeny little supplier. We're not paying anyone. You deal with that, and you have to deal with some of that pressure. It's not pressure-free. It's a different kind of pressure than if you're working for someone, but it is there. And you start becoming very acutely aware of money. When it's your own money, when you're managing personal debt, when you're looking at the cash flow. So I say to people, you don't want to obsess about it, because at the end of the day, this isn't about money. This is all about us making change and the rest of it. But we just need to make the money stuff add up. And there's some great homeless charities out there. And I met someone who's actually living in a squat at the social enterprise thing. She went, great, I'm running a social enterprise out of a squat. And I'm like, wow, how do you do that? So, yeah, absolutely.
Did you raise money on it?
Yes.
Oh, they're setting up a commune. Setting up a commune in their squat. It's great. Okay. Unless there's any burning questions on the money side. I mean, there are books about it, but the psychology is the stuff they don't tell you about. You get the stuff that goes, oh, here you go. Here's only your cash flow. And here's 80% of business plan. The psychology and having that bank manager. And your bank manager is one of those people. I've gone through 3. You get fussy about who they are, because when they're yes or no will make a difference to whether you've got a house or not. Yeah. You want to be very fussy about who has the power to say yes or no.
We're all different appetites for risk. And you need to know that, because if you get it wrong, it'll blow your head.
Yeah.
And it'll destroy your relationships and resources. And it's knowing how you manage those risks. The big problem people do is they start out thinking like the organisation you're in now, in terms of what they need to do, whatever they're trying to do. So you basically kill yourself before you get going, because you're carrying all those staff and those overheads. Mm-hmm. And you've got to think like an amoeba starts tiny and small, grows, and you shift from working full-time, doing a bit in the evening, to 50-50, or you have a number of income streams. You get all your stuff in one basket, very high risk strategy.
One of the biggest mistakes we made is left our job to set up a social enterprise and then tried to raise money. and didn't really get much money for the first 4 or 5 months. Disaster. I mean, we survived by the skin of our teeth. But like Simon says, the thing about employees is if you've got 20 employees in a building and your turnover is £1 million, which means your monthly cash flow requirement is, say, £80,000, and suddenly you get you 2 months go hiccup, you need to raise £160,000. If you start off with half of your part-time employee and a bit of an office, and your costs are £1,000 a month, and something goes wrong and you need to raise £2,000, you can raise £2,000. You might not like it, but you will max the credit card, you will get a loan that says, we just need £2,000 to get us from that month to that month. So if you start off small, you're making mistakes, then as you get profitable, you grow and grow. The people, when I was going back to the big PCT one, you know, so a lot of these big PCT community nursing models start off on day one with £20 million turnover organisations run by people who've never run their own business with almost no asset base. They're on a knife edge all the time to the stage where actually, if the PCT said, I'm sorry, we're in financial difficulty, we're going to reduce your funding by 5%, what do you do? So the beauty of small is it might not be pleasant, but one of the perverse things is, as individuals, you could probably raise £10,000 or £20,000 in a couple of days. As a business, it might take you 6 months to raise £10,000 or £20,000. And it's perverse, it shouldn't be. And there are other organisations out there, people like Unlimited, that actually fund social entrepreneurs to, you know, to go through that bit where they literally look after your living expenses, you know, whilst you set up a social enterprise and stuff like that. But there's books and resources and kind of stuff. But I would say, I'd assume, I mean, by all means, try and start at the bottom of the list. But I would work on the assumption that sooner or later you're going to need to look at personal money, personal debt, even if it's only a couple of grand, you know.
That was part 4 of the workshop on how to create a social enterprise. My name's been Dave Dawes. I'm from entrepreneurses.net, entreprenurses.net. The music is Firedance by DJ Booley, brought to you under Creative Commons license. And the final part of the workshop is next week.